Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. This episode today is certainly one of the most philosophical shows we have ever done. As you will quickly discover, Terry Hershey and I do what I am fond of saying. We go down deep and stay down long. Here's the question. Do you believe something because it is true, or is something true because you believe it? Again, do you believe something because it is true, or is something true because you believe it? Is truth a matter of choice? And is there substance to the thought that truth is simply a matter of what one chooses to believe? That is a question Terry Hershey and I ponder over the next hour. We had great fun, and I hope that you find your truth in this conversation. So, put on your oxygen mask and get prepared to join us in what we call today the infinite possibility of thought. On with the show. Terry.
Charles. It's like when you meet somebody on the street that you thought you went to high school with, and you just try out the name you remember them by.
And you're ready for Yo Hirsch. And then you get Terry. You say, "What? Did I just go on the wrong show?"
Yeah. Well, it's the kind of thing where your mother calls you by your full name, and you know something's wrong.
No, that would have to be Terry Hershey. Terry Hershey?
Yeah.
I don't know your middle name, so that would have been included. You believe that? I don't even know your middle name. I'm not going to ask it, but I don't even know your middle name.
My middle name is Dwayne, D-W-A-I-N-E.
Is it Terry or Terrence?
Terry. It's Terry.
Terry Dwayne Hershey, and I'm Charles Bascom Hedges.
Are you really Bascom?
Yeah, it's an Oklahoma name. It's my grandfather's name. There was a Walter Berry movie that was called one time Bad Bascom, and he was a criminal that befriended a young boy. It was quite good. So listen, before we get on the show to the subject I want to talk about today, based on something we talked about a few weeks ago, and we talked about awe and wonder, do you recall that?
I do.
I want you to tell me what overwhelmed you with the sense of awe this week.
Well, for starters, we had a foot of snow. Not quite, but... when you get snow, you exaggerate.
So did it require skis or snowshoes or anything?
Well, not about requiring, but anybody who has cross-country skis tries to find them, because you don't get snow like that here, and it's going to last you a couple of days is all. So it was the kind of snow. It's not like Texas is going through now with the electricity going and stuff, but it just was, everything was beautiful. The landscape was exquisite, and my walk is silence. All you hear is the footprint in the snow. That's literally all you hear.
Yeah, you hear the snow crunching under your feet, right?
You do, exactly.
Yeah. How long is your walk?
3 miles.
3 miles. Yeah, that's a nice walk. That's a good walk, especially in 30-degree weather. Or 20.
It was chilly, yeah. It was a good walk. That's my, it's a daily thing, my walk.
That's good.
And a bald eagle. We saw a bald eagle and just flew over us and then sat in a tree. So you just sit there for a while and just gazing at him.
Oh, actually had time. You had an encounter with a bald eagle.
We had an encounter with a bald eagle.
Oh, that is magnificent. Yeah, mine...
I preached to birds, you know, I preached to sheep in my Sabbath moment, and now I preach to geese, and so I was going to preach to the bald eagle, but he just looked at me with the way bald eagle's doing and says, "You talking to me?"
Now tell me, do you, because all the listeners that listen, that have heard you speak, do you have the geese talk to their neighbor?
Actually, the thing about geese is That's all they do is talk to their neighbor the whole time you're talking to them. They're just
it's constant chatter. Okay, you know, today, Terry, we are, I think I say every time we're going to do something different, but we're going to do something not so much different. Our show is going to be the same, but our subject matter is going to be almost philosophical, but a really relevant philosophy. And it came from, I was reading, you know, there's this book that came out a couple of years ago titled Yes to Life, and it was, they were papers and documents they found from Viktor Frankl, you know, the Man's Search for Meaning author. This Yes to Life, it's interesting, when I read it, I thought it was a good book, I thought it was decent, and I highlighted several things, and then to do a blog this last week, I went and read my highlights, and I said, you know what, I missed this book. This book was really powerful, and it had an incredible ending to it that really got me thinking of the relationship between personal belief and truth. Is there personally a distinction between belief and truth, and what is it? And let me just explain that, and then I want your feedback on it. And here's the high-level thesis, that we are in a world of infinite possibility of thought. So you get that. We have an almost infinite possibility of what we can think. But in order to actualize one of those thoughts, we must choose it, and I use the word, we must believe it. And in the believing and the choice of that word, that belief, that choice, becomes a truth. And that is a truth, and we'll get into what is that based on, science, religion, experience, rationalism, or whatnot. But I'm just curious of your idea of the interrelationship of belief, my personal belief, and what is true.
Wow. So are you asking me if there's truth, or are you asking me whether which determines which?
Well, let me tell you my thesis, is that I believe there is an ultimate truth out there. However, I believe because of our flawed nature that we cannot know it. We can only know about truth. I don't think we can know truth itself. We can know about truth. And the about truth that we know so frequently is something we believe. We believe something to be true, and therefore it is true. So I am saying sort of a yes to both, but in a practical sense, I'm saying that my belief determines what is true in my life. True,
yeah,
for me, not true, not
about,
true
for about
everybody.
The way we go about the world, we walk through the world. I mean,
precisely.
I mean, scientific, their truth, science has truth.
Well, but those truths are not uncommon, that those truths, new data, clarifies or alters those truths, do they not?
I know, but that to your point is, that's what makes it interesting. I mean, we'll just go to the Earth is flat. But as soon as somebody said the Earth is round, and it was a religious person who said it.
Yes.
He got kicked out of the church.
Yes. Was that Copernicus?
Because he was messing with their beliefs. But there's two kinds of things for beliefs for me. One is framing the way we make sense of the world. In other words, the world makes sense, so I have to have a way to see it. But in that way, in the world making sense, you know, that's why science will mess with a lot of belief systems, speaking as someone who came from a Christian background, right? Because then what do you do about heaven and hell and all that stuff? Because science can't tell you about that. So
well, science can't tell you
world,
anything about religion. Science can't tell you anything about religion, or very little.
Actually, it can.
Well, it does. I'm sorry.
You asked me about delight, and everything I told you about delight this week is places where the divine and sacred was alive and well.
Yeah, yeah.
And every bit of what I told you about was scientific.
Yeah, I take that statement back. You're right. You're right. You're right. So go on with your thought. I didn't intend to interrupt you.
Well, I'm on the second part of belief, is because that part of the belief is kind of, it's an interesting thing about making sense of the world. And I don't know why we hang on to that. And because that's what, it, with that kind of thing, then we're always scared to be wrong, you know? Making grand statements about who God is or what God is, and then you, and then you're scared to make changes because somehow. But the second part of beliefs has to do with connectivity, that we're not alone on the planet, and we have to somehow live with one another. And behaviorally, what matters? What values? What worldview do we use that allows that connectivity to not kill each other? And I would call that a belief system too.
Yeah, that's sort of, you know, it's not solely Jungian, but it's very Jungian in our archetypes, and that there are universal archetypes that are in Jung's concept would be more truths. But even then, Terry, I would submit that even in the public, you know, in the public arena, in the public beliefs that we need to have to cooperate with one another, those must come down to my choice to believe that. I must choose to personally believe that. Now, we are inculcated, we have in our religious system, of this is what you believe and what you shouldn't believe, and children are told what to believe and what not to believe. But there comes a time, hopefully in adult life, it doesn't happen everywhere, but hopefully in adult life, where we begin to make personal choices, our choices that are congruent with data, that are congruent with our history of experience, and that are congruent with, as we will talk about later, I think very important, with our values. But we are right. making a choice of that belief, of that public belief, like, you and I both believe on equality of opportunity and equality of all human beings. But that is a belief. Not everybody believes that. And they will support it with their data. I can disagree with it, but can I say they are wrong in their belief because I believe differently?
I mean, I say it all the time, so you can say it, but...
That's because you're a communist.
Yeah, the congruent is a good word. I like that word because I use the word honor. In other words, at some point, let me step back and then I'll answer the question about saying what's right or wrong. And I say someone's right or wrong. As a gardener, you know that the books I write about creating gardens, I'll go to a client's house and they say, can you design us a garden? And I say, of course. And then they get out these wonderful magazines that have these great pictures of gardens, right?
Yes.
And they'll say, man, can you do that for us? And the answer is, of course I can, because with the right amount of money, I can do anything. And then I tell them, but the problem is, if I do that, it won't be your garden. So then I take them through, and you've gone through this. You and Pam did this, because remember when we did the back
of
your one house?
Oh, yes, I remember that vividly. Yeah,
I said, when you're in this space, I don't really care what plants you want. When you're in this space, what would you like to experience here? So we start with the fact, goes back to your congruent thing about values. What are the values? Now, back up a second. Then I say to them, so now that we're going to prepare the space, you have a budget for your plants. You have a budget for all that stuff. But I want you to know that whatever you've budgeted for your pretty plant, you're going to have to double that budget for the dirt. So if you're asking about belief, belief isn't about what plants I'm growing. Belief is about what dirt I've planted. In other words, I have to back up and ask, and maybe it's your values thing. What am I honoring here? What is being honored? In other words, behaviorally is going to be the plants. Behaviorally is going to be the choices. Behaviorally is going to be whatever the decisions are, whatever my thinking is. That's the planting thing. But the belief system is the dirt.
I love that. it goes deeper than just this, I believe in whatever, you know, I believe in clean energy. What is the value that's
driving that? Well, I'll give you an illustration. Like, I grew up in, you know, the conservative environment I grew up in. So every one of them would say God loves everybody, right? That's their belief. Remember that?
Yes.
By the way, except now that we're looking at the flowers, except the Catholics who are going to hell, and then half of the Baptists who are in our church who are going to hell, and then they name all the people that God doesn't really love.
So does that mean just roses are going to hell? I mean, going to heaven?
What's that?
Does that mean just roses are going to heaven?
Exactly. Exactly. They're just choosing whichever one flower they like.
And that's Terry. In other words, go ahead. No, please go ahead.
No, I'm just saying they've never asked they don't want to talk about the dirt, because it's nice that you say that, but you don't really believe that is the point I'm making for some.
Yeah, because it's not going deep enough into the subject. But however, people are willing to. You know, you said the other day to me that a belief isn't a belief until you're willing to die for it. I'm ready to go that far. But there are people that have beliefs that I find absurd that are at that point of be willing to die for. I'd be willing to fight for. I'd be willing to pick up my AK-47 for. They're not at the dirt. They're only at what happens to be showing at that moment. They're not looking at the depths of it, how it impacts other people, impacts the rest of society. I want to go back, duck on this infinite possibility of thought. And Viktor Frankl says that for those of you who don't know, he's the man that wrote Man's Search for Meaning, one of the best-selling books of 20th century. And he says, unless you choose one of these infinite, you must choose one of these infinite possibility of thoughts in order to actualize it. So if you have a thought, you pick it and you actualize it, and that then becomes truth. And so he doesn't seem to indicate that you have to go to the dirt like you do, and I like a lot what you're saying. For instance, you know, without getting into the details, I think we have incredible examples in our political structure in the last year, I mean 4 years, but I mean especially in the last year. Different sides have different beliefs, and they are reinforced by the media they choose to follow, because they're only following, they're being supported by their beliefs. So they're really not gaining any new information, any different information, any thoughtful information. They're just creating support for whatever position they happen to be in. That is truth to them. That is an ultimate truth to them, that belief is true, and anybody that does not agree with that does not agree with truth. And I think that's part of what's going on in our country now, is that we have at least a handful of different belief systems that different groups of people are considering truth, and to violate those principles is violating what is, in their opinion, a collective, universal truth that is not indeed collective and universal. It is particular to that particular group. Did that make any sense?
Yeah. The Frankl thing we can come back to, but one of the reasons I find myself in the company of belief systems that are, let's call them inadequate. Or let's even call them, in the case of the illustrations you're giving, toxic. One of the reasons that happens is because for something, I'm assuming that my identity is predicated on that belief system. In other words, I don't have an identity outside of that.
Precisely.
My whole thing about Frankl is Frankl's whole point is you're able to go to that point of making choices because you have an identity that's already grounded. You have an authenticity that's already grounded. In other words, you don't have to believe something to be somebody.
Right.
Because you're somebody, now you get to work on the choices you're making, back to Frankl, because you are somebody, because there's a sufficiency there. And you don't need to fight whatever the fucking insecurity is. Excuse my French. But I think Frankl actually said it that way. But well, you don't have to do that.
So what then, as in, was it Pilate that said, what is truth? What is, in the human condition, in our flawed condition, in our brokenness, in our separateness, and, you know, the lack of unity did not have it create that we had at creation, we no longer have. How do we know what is the truth that we should follow? And I don't buy soul truth in science, religion, or experience, or rationalism. I think those are tools to apprehend truth and begin to understand about it. But we can't, I don't think we can access, because of our brokenness, I don't think we can access genuine, unadulterated truth.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think back to the whole thing about my identity. At some point, it begins with me being at home in my own skin. There's an authenticity there. There's a groundedness there. And if I need my belief to bail me out or something, then I'm not at home. And for me, here's the list. I know there's something messed up about my belief system if I'm living at the mercy of something. I know that there's something messed up in my belief system if I'm reacting, if I'm reactive or need to react. I know there's something messed up with my belief system if I live defensive. In other words, and there's always a them. And in other words, I can't say what you just said. I can't say you have your belief, I have mine. I live defensive. There's only one. Something's wrong if I need to project. In other words, because you can tell if a belief system is shaky when the person has to shout. If you believe it, just say it.
Yeah.
And then the other one is, there's something crazy about my belief system if I live afraid. Because then I push people away, I label people because they're different. That's what's happening right now. Different, and in other words, the script owns me. This has to do with what the narrative I carry in my life. If I start with a narrative of being at home in my own skin, I can start with the simple statement, I don't know the answer, but I'm unafraid. I'm unafraid.
I agree with that. I love to live in the realm of the unknown and just always searching, but I do come to conclusions. How do I protect myself that my conclusions don't become so permanent that I am no longer open to correction? New data, new information, new experiences lead me to understand that whatever my current belief system may be, it's not valid in this current situation because the data is showing me whatever I believed in the past is not consistent with the reality as I'm seeing it. How do I get, if I'm stuck in my belief system and I'm listening only to information that supports my belief system, how do I ever get to the point of being open to receive a change of mind, admitting, you know, the big one with me, admitting that I could be wrong? What can take me there? Is that a belief that takes me there? Is it a process? How can I begin to even challenge myself when I am so deeply ingrained in what I believe?
You know, when I studied in seminary, I was a Karl Barth studier, right?
Right.
For those who don't know, Karl Barth is a theologian who was used, you know, one that wasn't the first. One of them talked about, he wrote a book once called, said, I might have been wrong. Well, as a theologian, to write a book like that,
Especially, awesome. Especially of his renown.
Yeah. To your point is, what gives me the permission to say and do that? But that's, now I go back to the being at home in my own skin. In other words, if I don't have to prove anything there, and I'm not living afraid, then the to use your point, my script can then be more congruent as I go on, because I'm making choices. Guess what I learned today? Guess what I doubted today? Guess what I questioned today? Guess what I mended today? Guess what I risked today? That's the marvel of a belief system that allows that those verbs can also be a part of my belief system.
Yeah, and in my current studies, that's all we do is question our belief system. That's all we do is question our internal being.
And
what are we thinking of ourselves?
And you know when you do that, that comes from a greater place of security than the security of doubling down because you're afraid to be wrong.
See,
you know
you're bringing up a really, you've used the word twice, and then we're going to take a break after this, Paul, because I think we're getting close, but you've used the word twice so far in the last couple of paragraphs, and that's used the word fear and afraid. Aren't those largely elements that prevent us from expanding our belief system, modifying or even changing our belief system, because we are so satisfied, or maybe not even satisfied, but we're comfortable in our current situation that we don't want that to be altered, because out of a fear, you know, the great fear of the unknown. And
yeah, exactly to your point. In other words, my belief system is not just a system of choices that I've made in my mind, but I've automatically assumed it says who I am. Well, that's a big difference. And as soon as it says who I am, then it's a scary thing to say the earth is not flat. That somehow says something about me, which is not true. All it says is about something that you've adapted in your mind to walk through your day.
I like that, Terry, because that there's freedom in that. And in unassailable belief systems, there is no freedom. And you know, in an unassailable belief system, there is no room for compromise. And you just cannot think the same thing at 20 and 30 years old that you think at 50 and 60 and 70 years old. You just, life's experience.
Yeah, and to your point, that'd be the first question you'd ask somebody when they have a belief system is, tell me how this frees you. I agree with you wholeheartedly, but we don't ask that. We want to know how it quote, secures me. Isn't that interesting?
That's beautiful. Let's take a break and we'll come back to that. Hi, all. This is Charlie Hedges of The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I'm on the show with my good friend Terry Hershey, and we are talking about truth, belief, and choice. Do we have a choice in what we believe? And once we make a choice in what we believe, does that belief become truth? And that's what we are discussing. And now, I have a question for you that we alluded to earlier, but we really didn't get at. Do you believe that there is a general public truth? Does that exist? Or is it situational ethics? Is it all up to individuals? Or is there something that does hold true across the lines of human beings?
Wow. There is scientific reality that if you turn the temperature way down, you're going to get cold. If you turn the temperature way up, you're going to get hot. That's not a belief system.
Right.
That's just That's just the way life is.
If your system is functioning correctly. Huh? If your system is functioning correctly.
Well, that's true. Correct. At some point, belief systems of the different religions have tried to make those same statements relative to human well-being.
Okay.
When you ratchet up hate, things fall apart, such as, for example. Now, the way we perceive things are very differently. I grant you that. I believe there's ways that we create well-being for one another, and I believe there are ways that we can be toxic to the well-being to one another. And I'm always asking, what does that look like? And am I on the right side?
And that has to do with your metaphor of the dirt. That is
Correct.
The dirt. That's not the plants. That is the,
well, the
what I would call the values.
Exactly what it is. It's the values.
Yeah. It is on the values.
So then, to perfect illustration of the value thing there is, because if I'm having a discussion with somebody from the old days and they're talking about certain theological beliefs that are absolutely essential for them, I don't believe them at all, whatever the theological things are, the old ones. But the value for me is that we can still find refreshment in a relationship with God that is the dirt. Your flowers are going to be different than mine. Your flowers are going to be certain theologies you have that I find silly. But that's okay. We can still have a conversation about finding refreshment in God.
And so that is, therein is the value. And it's just...
Therein is the value. I'm always trying to look, especially, Charlie, and, you know, the last year was just crazy. I'm having conversations. When you talk to somebody who tells you that a pandemic going on doesn't exist, you don't have a conversation anymore. There's no English words you could use. So at one level, we have different flowers completely. So I'm always looking for what's the dirt underneath that enables me to have a conversation.
I agree with that. I take a little bit different of a take on that, in that first thing I have to say, I do not value science the way that non-religious people value science. I do not value religion the way religious people value religion. I believe there's an integration, and I believe that my theological truths are much bigger, much, much bigger, much grander than a set of do and don'ts in a moralistic society. But this is my belief, and it can be, and it certainly can be argued by people. In other words, I read Teresa of Avila talked about when she was talking about sin. She said, we cannot understand sin unless we understand sin in terms of love. If we do not understand it in terms of love, it makes no sense. It's not a bunch of activities. It's a bunch of things that prevent us from intimate communication with the divine. And I really warm to that. I really warm to that idea of anything that prevents me from intimate relationship is in fact an activity that I'm not going to value. Now,
well, so you know that, Charlie, but that just reinforces everything you said earlier about the freedom part. That's the dirt thing. In other words, if you start with what it frees us to do, frees us to have what? An intimate relationship with the divine, as opposed to prevent. And that's the wonderful irony about if I just get so stuck with the flowers of the do's and don'ts list, I've missed what I'm supposed to be freed to do.
Yeah, that leads me to a direction that I'm going to be taking in the next year or so, and that's the I'm calling it the intersection between knowledge and mystery. That that knowledge will take you so far, but it will take you astray. And that knowledge, when knowledge is absorbed into ministry, into mystery, then knowledge all of a sudden begins to make sense. And that knowledge now is viewed through an entirely different window. Yet I believe that there is a truth to that. And can I prove that scientifically? No. Can I prove that? I can only prove that experientially. Either I feel that, and that holds no value in a lot of people's hands, in a lot of people's minds.
Well, yet our senses are the first. That's the first way we process anything.
It is, and you know, science has taken such a high state that I think it's. I love science. I am an evolutionary Christian, and I love, and it's not just not Darwinian evolution. I think Darwin's theory of evolution is just a subset of evolution in general. It is not about evolution. Evolution is much bigger. It is a growing.
He was just somebody at the time making a try. But I mean, I'm standing here looking at my eagle the other day, and let's say there's five of us looking at the eagle, and every single one of us, let's say every single one of us has a different, quote, belief system about theology or epistemology or cosmology, let's say.
Right.
All
right.
Three of us, all five of us. Completely right. Different about all those things. And yet all of us are undone by the eagle.
Paul and I just did a podcast last week, and we did one on patience, and the number one enemy of patience, selfishness. Yeah. What I want.
Yeah.
Because I'm not getting what I want, I become impatient. And that's what we
see. But Charlie, that's so perfect, because there we are. If I'm not at home in my own skin, then I'm fighting, then I'm looking for other stuff, and then it becomes, that's where the push-pull starts.
I need to honor my beliefs.
Right.
At the same time of honoring my beliefs, there is this little haunting thought in the back of me that I could be wrong. But it doesn't, you know, I'm not thinking every time I explore one of my beliefs, I'm thinking, oh, this could be wrong, this could be wrong. I just know somewhere in the back of my mind that different information could come across me that make me think differently and believe differently.
And my way of saying it is, I know I don't have the full picture yet. I know.
Precisely.
I don't have the full picture yet. I've got only this many years and this way of looking at it, and that's the whole picture I have. And I know that certain parts of my upbringing, et cetera, have sort of skewed where I look and how I look. I don't know if you knew, but back in the day, I used to get on a plane and travel and talk.
Are you kidding me? You know, as the forever platinum member of American Airlines.
Here's what's interesting, Charlie, because it wouldn't always just be religious groups. I mean, religious, but also, you know, I did healthcare and education. But the point is, the point I'm making is, if people didn't read my bio or anything about me, they just know I was a speaker. This when I start, people assume you're one of them. They don't ask. So it's going to mess with them if you're not. Isn't that interesting?
No, it's not interesting. It's exactly making my point. You know,
assume you're one of them. So I was at a Catholic gig lecture, and the woman afterwards said, "Tell me what you're talking about." And I said, "I'm going to talk about God and chocolate, and the dance of life." And she said, "But you're not even Catholic." And I said. Well, I feel obligatory guilt most every day. Does that count?
and then add to that, I feel shame, so I'm tied to my Protestants.
And that's a shame. But how are you able to talk about God if you're not a part of the church? I just love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And then I said to her, okay, I'll make a deal with you. You can convert me later, but before that, can we just eat chocolate together?
Yeah.
And pretend God's with us. In other words, I'm just trying to find some dirt underneath that. Because I don't know the answer to that. I don't. But I know you're scared about things in life. I'm scared about things in life. It's hard to navigate it as it is.
Yeah, I want to end our time on values, because I think that's so important. But I want to bring up something else, and I do have strongly held beliefs, but I value openness. And so I always want to be open in my beliefs. It doesn't make them any weaker. And anybody that knows me, I think you would agree that I'm pretty steadfast in my beliefs, but I am willing to be open. And example is that I had it written. Is that I personally like to challenge my beliefs. I like to see, during all of the hell week going on, I watch three news outlets, one from the left, one from the right, and one from the center. Not that I wanted to adopt any of them. I just wanted to know their positions. I just wanted to know where they came from, what they were advocating, and hopefully without too much judgment, although, of course, there's going to be judgment because I a little bit take sides, but I will periodically do things to challenge my beliefs. Like you recommended to me a very moderate right. I'm not radical right by any means, but I'm not moderate left. I'm moderate right. But you gave me a very, what you thought was a moderate left, and I think was a radical left, journal that was so, well, I don't mind saying it was the Atlantic Magazine, and it is so well written. It is some of the best writing that I've read in a magazine. I mean, just as far as the art of literature, of writing, it is as fine as you can get. And so many of the articles brought up great points, great things that challenged my beliefs. Overall, big picture of the article, I disagreed with. I didn't like that. I didn't agree with the direct. Not that I didn't like, but I didn't agree with the direction. But there were so many points, and I found that to be challenging to me, and almost alienated for me. And yet, there was tremendous learning in that, Terry. I mean, I really caught how people who don't think like me do think. And that is so important that I don't think everybody thinks like me. I don't think everybody has my belief system and that my belief system is better. And if they don't adhere to my belief system, they are somewhat inferior to me. That's perhaps part of my dirt, that it just it doesn't make sense. But I like challenging my beliefs. And so I try to come up with something that is congruent, that is in alignment with being at home in my own skin. What do you think about that?
Because a lot of it is not necessarily the things we believe per se end up being different. It's the way we approach it, the way we go at it. And because, to your point, underneath what you and I may differ about, there's a value system we still hold underneath that informs the decision we've made.
And the value system is very consistent for you and I personally.
Yeah, the value system we share.
Yeah, I wrote this, and this is what I wrote in my blog, and I will just quote a couple of sentences in my blog, and this is kind of wrapping us up here, in that I'm thinking both public and personal values. And for me, personal values that impact everything I believe, for me personally, and I'm just naming a handful, there's surely dozens, but I believe in love, I believe in kindness, I believe in openness, I believe in fundamental human equality, and much of this, my source for this is not so much science, but my source for this maybe not be religion, but it is a divine authority. But even my value system in a divine authority is a conscious choice, is it not? That I choose, because I can so resonate with this divine authority, that I choose that is my authority.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, yeah, but the irony, Charlie, is every single one of the things you believe, although we wouldn't say, quote, it's scientific, it's verifiable.
How so, Terry?
We know that kindness works.
Yep.
We know that kindness doesn't tear us apart.
Right.
We know that kindness connects us.
Yeah.
In other words, my point is, they reinforce the dirt you've planted. If it doesn't reinforce the dirt you planted, no wonder you get messed up with the flowers that come up.
So in this conversation of the unlimited consciousness of thought, or whatever I said that was a long time ago, and I must choose one to activate it, I am making my choice. If I think about it, I am making my choice on the dirt. I'm making my choice on what type of soil do I need to discover the flowers that I love.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I'd like to invite people to is that if they get stuck on the flower part, I said, what kind of dirt do you want? And because sometimes then I'll make adjustments with statements I make about the flowers I want to grow.
Like what? Give me, translate that into values for me, or into belief or values or choice.
For example, it started early on. I assumed that because I had certain beliefs as a Christian, then I had to put Christianity over and against other religions. It's interesting. I just assumed that. Obviously, there has to be a right and a wrong. But when you start with the dirt has to do with the fact that there is a divine pulse inside of every spirit, every body on the planet, then guess what? I could have a flower with my belief system about my faith, and you could have a flower with a belief system about a completely different faith, but it's coming from the same dirt.
I agree. I so agree. I'm looking up, I'm looking up for a quote with Viktor Frankl, and he indicates that, it was my conclusion. I can't say that Frankl indicated this, although he indicated part of this, that perhaps it all comes down to core values. What I believe about the exterior world, about what my exterior world, is always predetermined about what I believe in my inner world. Do you agree with that?
Yes, and that he's just saying the dirt matters more.
Precisely. And therefore, it is my responsibility, and Frankl is big on responsibility. He's big on responsibility. It is my responsibility to make conscious choices about the dirt I'm going to plant my seeds in. I make conscious choices about my values.
Wholeheartedly.
I think that wraps up our day today, is that we have wrestled with what to believe, what not to believe. All of those are important, but they are merely not symptoms, but consequences of my ultimate value system, the dirt that I'm planting the seeds in. You know, I think incumbent upon all of us is to reevaluate our value system and see, does our value system make sense in the world that we live in today for us personally and for the world as a whole, because we are a global society and we are now, believe it or not, we are responsible for everyone. We are not just responsible for ourselves, but our actions have impact on the global world.
Right. If being at home in my own skin is something I can start with, then I'm not afraid of asking those questions.
Exactly. Thanks so much, buddy. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and please be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life, where you will find weekly blogs and podcasts, and you can always subscribe to make it easier to access. And so until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.